Lily Nakako. Greetings, everyone. This is Indigenous Politics from Native New England and Beyond, and I'm your host, Kehaulani Kawanui. This show focuses on the political struggles and resistance of Indigenous peoples. The program is produced in the studios of WESU in Middletown, Connecticut, a place also known as Mattabesset, homeland of the Wangunk Indian Tribe. On today's show, I will be airing two incredible talks recently delivered at the Left Forum. Each spring, Left Forum convenes the largest gathering in North America of the U.S. and international left. The event was held from June 7th through 9th at Pace University in New York City, and the theme this year was Mobilizing for Ecological and Economical Transformation. And the talks I will air are from presentations made on a panel called Indigenize Our Paradigms. The session was organized by Teokasin Ghost Horse, and I will play his own presentation, as well as Deborah Whiteplume, who is also on the panel. I want to acknowledge that Janine Yazzie, as well as Kent Lebsock, were also part of this incredible panel. I'll tell you more about each speaker momentarily, but first I want to let listeners know that if you want to catch up on any past episodes or share information about the program, you can go to my website for the audio archive, and there you can listen at your convenience. Go to indigenouspolitics.com. I also administer a Facebook group by the same name as the program, Indigenous Politics from Native New England and Beyond. There you can follow global Indigenous news and get bulletins about upcoming episodes. And listeners can also write to me with feedback and questions. My email is indigenouspolitics@wesufm.org. Again, that's indigenouspolitics@wesufm.org. And now I'm going to play Teokasin Ghost Horse's presentation first here. Some of you may recall that he's been a guest on Indigenous Politics before. Back in fall 2011, when I did a special episode on Occupy Wall Street and Indigenous engagements with the concept of Occupy. He is from the Cheyenne River Lakota Sioux Nation of South Dakota. And many of you will know him from his own program. He is the host of First Nations Indigenous Radio, which is produced out of WBAI in New York City and syndicated also through Pacifica Radio, like this show is. He is a survivor of what he calls the Reign of Terror from 1972 to 1976 on the Pine Ridge, Rosebud, and Cheyenne River Lakota reservations, and the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs boarding and church missionary school systems designed to, quote, kill the Indian and save the man. I want to acknowledge that he is an incredible musician and has been a major figure in preserving and reviving the cedar wood flute tradition and has combined spoken word and music performances since childhood. Here's his presentation. Again, this was from the panel that he organized called Indigenize Our Paradigms. Teokasin Ghost Horse.
I'm going to make this real quick and hopefully painless. And by the time I get through that, no one will be harmed walking out of here. And I just want to start with, I was collaborating with a friend who's a publisher, and he was thinking the same thing. You know, I was going to think about you, and I'm calling you, and you're calling, thinking about everything at the same time. That's some synchronization or something. Well, this morning I was thinking about, you know, what I'm going to say, and should I write it down, or should I just speak from the heart, or, you know, shall I roll it off my head and impress people with information, which I really don't have. But I thought about this, is that, you know, the reasons why we sing our songs is because we recognize all the relations. It's just not about us human beings. It's all about all of us that we don't even see sometimes, and our rational minds have just kind of individualized and programmed ourselves out of the relationship. And so we end up rationalizing ourselves into existence again by using I, me words. And I say that there are 436 words in English that refer to self. So we got a lot of, you know, whatever we're doing, we're having, what an uncle would say, we're having a human identity crisis in the world now, because we don't know who we are. And so we, and the Indigenous peoples, are always looking to knowing who we are. It's really funny because a lot of people, Indigenous, aren't going someplace to find out who we are. We're not doing that. in America, Americans are trying to figure out who are we? And they go back through anthropology, anthropocentric eyes, to figure that out. And it continues. And I think this is reaching someplace that we don't understand because we're using transformative language, transcending language, higher consciousness, raising consciousness, and we haven't even dealt with this consciousness here. We haven't had any common sense with that consciousness. And I know that in the old traditional way of the Lakota, that we were required to have a vision at 12 years old, men and women. This country doesn't have that. To move on and recognize that we become men and we become women. This country doesn't have that. You don't have a transition period. You're stuck in adolescence emotionally. So everything is knee-jerk, and your latest president was one of them. Everything he did was reactionary. And this is a plague. It's among all Americans. All Americans. And so I'm going to start right there. And the phrase that we were thinking of, I mentioned it last session here, session three, when we had the Native Radio panel here. And I started, and we were thinking the same thing, my friend sitting here in the audience, that we have, Indigenous peoples have PTSD, and in working with PTSD, working with Maria Yellowhorse Braveheart Jordan, who went to school at Columbia School of Sociology, was wondering why these Native people exhibited all this, this hypervigilism, and were reacting as if they were still in war. And she took the chart that they used for Vietnam veterans, and she would go among Native people, especially in South Dakota, and she found that the Native people's results were much higher than that of Vietnam veterans. Because we've been at it a longer time. When I was growing up, and still today, the small community that I come from, when a non-Native comes into the community, the children run and hide, or you can see them running out of the house to hide in the creeks. This really happens. And I cued me in, but because in their minds, they were still running from the cavalry. This is present today. And we don't think so because we're not exposed to it. We're in New York where everybody gets along and we're speaking 254 different languages and everybody's different color and we're tolerating each other and racism is, whatever. We throw that around as if it was something to eat every day. But when I think about this, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's really not this. It's called patriarchal traumatic stress disorder. That's what we all are suffering from, an inclusive terminology. That being said, is that there are over 7,200 languages spoken in the world, and 5,600 of those 7,200 are indigenous languages. At the rate of 64 per year going extinct, 1, 2 to 3 every 2 weeks going extinct. And by the end of the century, there will be no more indigenous languages spoken. 5,600, those languages do not have a marketability lexicon. They cannot sell or buy or trade. They can't understand what a bank account is. But of the 1,400 languages that insist that they know what they're doing with our earth, that they insist that this is the way, with science as their new religion, those languages are the ones that are based, especially in this English that I'm speaking today. If you understand that indigenous peoples live on approximately 67 of the world's pristine lands left in the world, 67% of the world's pristine lands left in the world, and that It's not encouraging as it sounds because 92% of the world's prairies are gone. 96% of the world's forests have disappeared. 80% of the world's rivers no longer support life. So whose paradigm are we doing this under? I wouldn't say indigenous peoples. When you think about that paradigm, you think about how it got to be one of domination, because Latin is at the base of English. 60% of this language that I speak now, English, and the Romance languages, is based in Latin. The etymology is Latin-based. And that etymology of that language, Latin-based, is one really means to colonize with Christ. That's what Christopher Columbus means, to colonize with Christ, Cristobal Colón. But when we get past that, we're thinking about the language we speak in Latin is one with domination, with war, possession, ownership, patriarchy, and individualism. That's nothing to do with relationship, but all has to do with rationality and rationalizing existence. To do and give you a right for that one person of the 437 words that describe self. You slot yourself in place because you have become a digit, a binary code, a dualistic thinker. Because it's about us and them in this language. Mitakwe Oyasi in Lakota means all is related. All is inclusive. And I dare say that there is no word because of Mitakwe Oyasi of exclusion in Lakota. But that's what inclusion means. But we come up with a dualism of division within the language of English. I know this because I've been fighting it every day. I have nightmares over it every day, trying to figure out, am I using colonizing language like Janine was talking about? Are we aware of this? I wake up every morning, and I said this last year, my first ceremony is with water. I realize that water is in all of us. Everything. That's what I do. That's a reality. It doesn't make it political or anything like that or taxable. It's water. But we don't realize that. We're going to talk about, you know, financial systems that are falling and how can you hang on here. And when I describe how the despair of indigenous peoples are such that we don't even have an economic transformation coming. We have 85-90% unemployment in South Dakota. Where's our economic transformation? Where's our decisions? Our decisions are not going to be made through the bank like Americans. Our decisions have to be and will be and can be in the future and as a past, as today, will be made through Mother Earth. There's a big difference in that thinking process. And I'm going to stick to that. No matter where I'm stationed, I say I'm stationed in New York. Because that's what it is. You know, I'm here because, you know, when I started radio 21 years ago in Olympia, Washington, the name of the radio program was Exposing the Apologetic Predator. And that's what I think I'm still doing. Because it's self-explanatory. And I figured it out. About 20%. That's what this language and this citizenry cannot understand of the spiritual logic that we have that applies to all of us. Now that's going to require a whole discourse in Professor Kalani's class in Wesleyan University, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a lifetime to figure out how to turn all this around. But see, I don't trust in man or systems or anything like that. I can't do that. Because then I lose faith. I'm disappointed in you as human beings. I'd like to say that I'm overjoyed that we got a new president in, or that we passed an environmental law, or that we're fighting, you know. But the war that we have, the peace that we think we have, is being defined through the war machine all the time. So we're so far away from being, well, knowing what peace is, that we have to have forms like the left form, which to me and other natives have said is only the left arm of the right. It's the same system. We don't belong to it. We did not make the atom bomb, nor did the monkey. So there's a responsibility rather than a right to vote, a right to do this. There's a responsibility concept that's missing totally here, and that's one of relationship. I wanted to say that, and you know, I think that the most thing that we have really lost here that we have to regain is that we've lost intimacy with Mother Earth. We don't know what that means anymore. It's part of the identity crisis that we're going through. And as for us, you know, the deeper the American dream goes is basically Mother Earth's nightmare. And I preface it that way because we treat Mother Earth as if she's a patient. When we're the sick ones, we have answers for Mother Earth. We think we do. Because we can throw money at a mountain, we can throw money at a river, and we think we're going to clean it up. And Mother Earth is never going to be political in that way. She's doing her thing. We haven't recognized that. We call it, as I wrote in the 90s, people were saying, oh, global warming. It's like, oh, this is nice. And then in the 2000s, they were saying climate change. Oh, this is nice. But to indigenous peoples, it's climate crash. Very much real terminology, real time. Not virtual, it's coming, it's something that happened to everybody else. But while I was coming back in here, I noticed, and this is the thing, because I just came back from Sweden. And in Sweden, they were saying, we don't have a word for indigenous. We don't know what that means. And I was thinking about the Sami people, the indigenous people there who live in teepees. And these, they were talking about the Sami as if they were going away. And they looked to this country and they enjoyed Native Americans much more so than they did their own people, their own indigenous peoples. It's the same way here in this country. Americans pay attention to what's going on over there. Because if I say, welcome to my country, I'm going to piss half of you off because it is my country. And you can't do a damn thing about it. And it can go back legally, and you can see it legally, that still belongs to Native people. But it's an agreement that you would be here. And we're just kind of waiting on you all to get your act together, but that's your responsibility. That's all it is. You know, left or right, it still hasn't happened yet. Still hasn't happened yet. There's so many things that are obviously happening behind the obvious. And I was going to say, the way to think about in Lakota, that you were to see this blackboard, this whole blackboard, as Lakota. You see the whole picture. But if you speak English, you see a strip of it. You're only being rationed to see it. But if you're relational, you see the whole picture. And they can control that little strip. So you rehash words, and you come up with new ones like recycle. What is that? That's an alternative global green thing. But if you think about it, it's not recycle, it's source. Mother Earth is a source of life. She's not recyclable. That's what we've turned ourselves into, as resources for a system. So with that, I just wanted to start whatever I do, you know, on the radio. And I just wanted to include that. I know that, you know, that something creator of Hantankai is watching, and that I owe my words and my heart to the creation, the mystery, the great mystery. It's not a spiritual thing, it's reality. Last night, I was in Connecticut, and I was coming down a flight of about 20 stairs. I slipped on the first one, and I slid. But see, I got to the bottom, and I popped right back up. I looked to see if my hat was on it. Taking my coat off, and the mat that I fell on, it was out of order, so I placed it back. This is all I got out of it. So, you know, immediately I know that I appreciate. Immediately I know that because of appreciation, I'm aware. And because of those two things, can allow me to use the intelligence that comes from the heart. Because this is 125,000 electromagnetic waves come from the heart. This is how we indigenous peoples think. But they tell you to use this thing up here. It emits about 5,000 only electromagnetic waves. But your system, your society, puts everything into this weak thing up here. You understand it comes from here. So, and I do this so that others may live, and that's just how it is. Nothing spiritual about that. It just is that way. We can have this conversation all day long over coffee at Deborah's house, or Janine's house, or John's house. And we're talking this stuff all the time, and you know, somebody comes in, they're all like, oh, spiritual. Wow, that person is missing something, you know, because they're looking for that religious experience because they've been far away from that connection. Well, all we got to say is get the hell out of this damn city. Get back to where someone knows you. And that's, for starters, is Mother Earth.
And again, listeners, that was Teokas and Ghost Horse's presentation from this year's Left Forum, which was held from June 7th through the 9th at Pace University in New York City. The next talk I want to air was delivered by Deborah Whiteplume on the same panel. Regular listeners of Indigenous Politics will recall that she was also a guest on this show, speaking to us at one time about Keystone XL Pipeline, which is an ongoing battle, and she has been at the front lines. She is director of Oe Aku, Bring Back the Way. Oe Aku is a grassroots organization comprised of Lakota people and allies. The headquarters are located on the banks of Wounded Knee Creek. And listeners, Oe Aku is spelled O-W-E, capital A-K-U, Oe Aku. Oe Aku is engaged in cultural preservation, social change work, environmental protection, and 1851 and 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty rights. I want to also mention, for people interested in following up, once you hear her talk, I'm sure you're going to want to check it out. And also want to make sure listeners know about a film that Oe Aku is in the midst of producing right now called Crying Earth, Rise Up, which is an intimate portrait of the human cost of uranium mining and its impact on sacred water. It tells a timely story of protecting land, water, and a way of life. Here's Deborah Whiteplume.
Well, I want to thank the organizers who pulled this together. There always has to be organizers getting out their work and talking to people, making phone calls, sending emails, printing posters, hanging them up, doing it all again. Bring people together for something good, something real, something powerful, something strong. Something that means something. So we're all here today together now in a good way, and I greet all of you in a good way. I want to just introduce myself a little bit here. I said I am Colors of the Sun Woman. My Teoshpai is the Iteshicha Teoshpai from the Lakota Nation. I come from the Oglala Band, the largest band of the Lakota campfire, which is the largest campfire. Now, when we're born, as an individual, you know, I'm a baby. That's who I am. I'm born into my tiwahe. That's my household family. My household family lives in the Teochpai. That's all the tiwahes living together. When all the Teochpais come together, that's the Oglala band. When all the other bands, the Oglala, Sichagu, Dazipjo, all of the other bands, when they all come together, we're the Lakota Nation, we're the Lakota Council Fire. When the Dakotas come, when the Nakotas come, together we're Ocheti Shakumi, the seven council fires. So those are six identities. Your individual, your Tiwahe, your Teochpai, your band, your council fire, Ocheti Shakumi, and we're in the universe. Those are our seven identities. That's who we are. That's who I am. That's who my brother is. We're not just an individual out there in the world, separate from everything and everyone. When we're born, we are in our mother's womb, come from the Star Nation. Our first home is water. When we come from our mother, our birth mother receives us, puts water in our mouth, bathes us in sage. So we have ceremony. We have ceremony before we're even born. It's called welcoming of the spirit when the baby moves the very first time. We have ceremony. The Teochpai has ceremony, welcomes the spirit. Then when we're born, we have another ceremony. Always to acknowledge our role and our responsibility within those seven realms of life, of existence, of living. So Lakotas, we really like to have ceremony all the time. Ceremonies for everything. I went outside to burn some sage, and I left my jacket in here. So I was outside, and I took water. My sister brought me water. So I went outside, and I rolled a cigarette, and I was offering some smoke, and I was burning sage, and I was drinking water, and I was really having my own little ceremony out there for us to be good together. And then I come back in and I forgot my name tag. It was in my coat pocket and they would not let me in the building. They would not let me in the building. And I said, well, you saw me come in and out all day, right? And he said, you can't come in without your name tag. You gotta find another, somebody to let you in. I can't leave my post, I gotta guard this door. So he guarded his door, so I went around and scouted around and found another entrance. And I you know, so I kinda had to sneak up on camp here. And so sometimes, you know, I got trouble for my little ceremony out there. They locked me out, you know. So it's kind of strange because left forum, you know, there's the left and there's the right. But to my mind, that doesn't make sense, you know, because we're in the center. We strive to always be in the center. That's balance. That's harmony. That's wola puta. Maybe the only really quick way to translate Lakota thought into English as peace is Wola Lakota. So I was telling you about who I am and where I come from. My mother comes from the Cheyenne people and married into the Lakotas, the Oglalas. And on my dad's side, he comes from the Ideshicha Teochpai, or the Red Cloud family. So there's a lot of responsibility that we have as Lakota people. And my brother talked about how we can sit and have a conversation and somebody comes in and then it's all sacred, you know. Oh, they're just being so sacred and respectful and, you know. And to us, it's a natural, normal Lakota way of life. That's how it is to us. See, that's our paradigm. That's how we see life. We see each other as relatives. And our teaching in those seven realms of existence is to be a good relative. So you learn to take care of your little sister and your little brother. We call Misu because we put a little braid right here. Put a little braid on top of his hair so when he tries to run off, you can grab it. Then he's not going to go falling off that cliff, you know. And then your older brother. You know, we have all these terms of kinship, and that's part of who we are. Mother is Ina, which means mother. But underneath that, on a deeper level, you hear your babies cry, and they say, Ina, 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 breath of life. Ate means dad. Underneath that, it's shoulder to lean on. Grandfather, Tunkashila, is grandfather, and it's also the oldest of my bloodline, and I love you. Unchi is grandmother, also means oldest dwelling. So it's like that, our kinship system. Our language is very descriptive. And Inamaka, you know Ina is, what's Ina? Maka is dirt or soil, or on a deeper level, my ancestors. So Unchi Maka is the oldest dwelling of my ancestors. This is how we think. This is how we behave. This is how we do. Unchi Maka means something to us as a relative, right? Not as a warehouse storing all the uranium, gas, oil, tar sands, gold, silver, whatever the fat taker wants. Now, fat taker is not a race of people. Fat taker is a concept. Long time ago, our people were in camp. It was winter, deep snow, halfway up the teepee. A man came, staggering, wandering into camp. He didn't even see us. There was so much snow. He had white skin, hairy face like that, dirty, stink, smell bad, starving, hungry, thirsty. Oh, I smell something, smell good. Well, all summer, our women of the whole Teoshpite now, remember all the teepees kept together of the relatives, all us women, we went out and we worked, and we took the fat from the buffalo. They don't have a lot of fat. And we put it together and we put it in a belly bag or a bladder bag. And then we hang it in a tree. And we use it for medicine. We use it to make fire. We use it for cooking. We have a lot of uses for it. Very valuable, rare. All the women in camp worked all summer to make that for all our Teoshpite to share together. But he comes in. Good, or he gets one and he tears it open and stuffs it in his mouth. And oh, he's getting happy. He's got some in his tummy. He sees another bag. He takes it and he eats it and he's gorging. Gets another one. And pretty soon all the bags of fat are gone and he leaves. He didn't know somebody made that. He didn't care somebody made that. He didn't leave any for somebody. He took it all for himself. So we call him fat taker. Now that means greedy, selfish, petty, vain, self-centered. That's what it means to us. It doesn't mean white man. It happened to be a white man. So fat taker is washichu. That's what it means, fat taker. He takes the fat. Now there's Lakota washichus. Greedy, selfish Lakotas, greedy, selfish Dene, greedy, selfish Japanese and white people and black people and everybody. It's spread everywhere. That selfishness, that greed, It's greed. He wanted it all for himself. So we called him Fat Taker. But that's not what we call the white man. We have names for all of them. The first Italian we saw had big feet, so he's Sitonka. The first German we saw, they speak harshly with their guttural, so Iashicha speaks harshly. That's what we describe everything. You know, black man, black skin. Japanese, Ishta, Utita, ice cold black man. So to us, it's not about race the way you think of it in the English language. You know, I think the English language is really a hurtful language. And it's not good for us to speak it. It's not good for red nations to speak it. I think we have to think with our own minds, from our own language, from our own heart and spirit, and then that's who we are. And then we're happy. And then we're healthy. And then we're in balance. And then we're in harmony. And then we're a good relative. The sky is our relative. The moon, the sun, Mother Earth, the trees, the horses, everything is our relative in creation, in the universe. We're all related. That's what Midakuye Oyasi means. We are all related. So if your nephew's in trouble, or your auntie, who are you going to protect?
Mm-hmm. Oh, both of them, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no reason to even think about which one. But the way this system is set up in this big land is you have to choose. Oh, am I going to save the whales? Or am I going to save the wolves? They're really coming after the wolves now. We gonna save that mountaintop over there? We gonna save New York from fracking? It sets us up so we have to choose. And that's really hurtful. That's really hurtful. And I don't like to use the word indigenous. To me, that's another settler colonizer word, term, way of thinking. When I teach young people, I work with a lot of young people. She is her own nation, very distinct, separate from my nation, distinct, separate from his nation, distinct, separate. But what does the American government do? Okay, like you're a corn nut. You're a lace-made potato chip. I'm a hot fry, right? Government gets us, puts us all in this big bowl and mixes us up. Now we're trail mix. And they give it a title, Federal Indian Policy. Now they can treat us all the same. We have our territory. It's got his territory. It's got her territory. Language, history, ancestors, destiny, prophecy. All separate, distinct. But not anymore. Now we're federal Indians, and they're going to use that policy. They had one called Scorched Earth. That's when they came to where we are, out on the land. And they killed the buffalo. All of them, except for about 300 that were hiding out. And they did that to subdue us, because they wanted the gold in our sacred Black Hills. They wanted the uranium, the silver. They knew all that stuff was out there, and they wanted it. And we fought them, and we wouldn't quit fighting. Our women fought with spoons and our bare hands. See, we didn't have a separate military like America could send out the 7th Cavalry while all their wives and kids got to stay home. We were in camp, and their 7th Cavalry came and attacked our camps. Every man, woman, and child had to fight. And we did. And we got a treaty. 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty, 1851 Horse Creek Treaty, where we retained a land base. We never ceded any land. We said, you can go through. You can use as much land as will fit between your wagon wheels. But that, they were not honest with us. They were not honest with us. So the time came when we were marched at gunpoint once Crazy Horse was killed. We were marched at gunpoint in a blizzard, and where we are today is where the blizzard hit the hardest, so we stayed there. So America called it Prisoner of War Camp 344. It's still on the books today as 344. Only Native people have another number in America. Y'all have a Social Security number, maybe a driver's license number. Well, we have an Indian number. It starts with 344, and then there's a number. Only Natives, so-called Natives in this country, have blood degree, like horses and dogs. You go to a museum. We went to one in Denver, Museum of Natural History. All the plants from the Great Plains and the animals and the Lakotas. Right there? Yeah. So imagine that. Imagine that, knowing every single day of your life you're being encroached on. You're being surrounded. You're being attacked. Every day of your life, imagine that. Then you can understand what he's talking about, post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of our people have that. They don't even know they have it, but they have it. Because the battles never end up. The fight is still going on. Right now we're fighting for sacred water. Inuwayaku, which is the name of the political and social work that our extended family, my husband and I, that's the name we gave our a vehicle that we can do this work in. It means bring back the way. We're fighting for sacred water against uranium corporations out of Canada. Cameco Corporation has an ISL in Situ Leach mine 20 minutes from our southern border. They want three more. We're fighting them on that. PowerTech, another Canadian corporation, wants to ISL uranium mine in our sacred Black Hills. We're fighting them on that. Well, we found out about the tar sands oil mine because we found out about the Keystone XL pipeline, which needed to cross our water line because our drinking water has to be piped in from 200 miles away. And we found out KXL was going to cross it in a number of places, and we said, well, what's KXL? So we found out, and we said, well, where's it coming from? So we found out about the tar sands. This was maybe 8 years ago. And so then we started educating ourselves about it and our neighbors and our friends. And we have a one-hour radio show once a week. It's called the Oweapu Hour on KILI Radio. It's also on the internet. One of the boys in a family goes, he's the host, and such a hard job. For 1 hour a week, you have the ear of at least 30,000 people right around you, and however many people want to get on the internet. That's an amazing responsibility, and it's an amazing opportunity as well. So my nephew, he's just always, I should have him call you. He worked so hard on describing his radio show. Who are his guests going to be? How does it tie into last week? He wants to do this, boom, 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 in the future, week 3, 4, 5, 6, always planning, thinking. He's going into people's minds. So this is really a serious thing for us, for our family, for our organization. He's going into their minds. And there's a big responsibility that goes along with that. So he really works hard on that. I'm a total believer in radio. But I don't like the word indigenous. I think it's part of the colonial construct, and it's just another way of calling us trail mix. It strips us of our true identity and our nationhood. Nationhood. A lot of people use the word sovereignty. But I like to say the word nationhood. We are our own nation. If all y'all went away tomorrow, we could still be here. We could still exist. We would have our own government, our own way of commerce. We would have every social system in place that we needed, because we had it before America was America, and we'll have it again. We've got to keep it alive. We have to live it. We have to teach it. We have to revive it, preserve it, practice it to all of our generations so that it will be here. Because I know the day's coming when things are going to change. And you know, we didn't sit there. In this country, they have the census. Since they've been keeping track of the census, our people, or the people up on Cheyenne River, where we're going in 3 days, have been the poorest counties in this country since they started keeping track. So we didn't sit there in the poorest county in America and say, let's fight the world's biggest uranium producer. We didn't sit there and say that. We didn't even know who Cameco was. We just knew they were contaminating our water. So we start fighting them. We found out how to fight them under the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and we got it together, and they haven't turned a shovel full of dirt in 7 years. So we fought off Rex Oil from our land. They wanted to come mine oil on the beautiful Pine Ridge homelands. They want our uranium. They want our natural gas. And we have a policy, no mining. No mining. Because we have to protect our sacred water. That's what it's about. It's not about fighting uranium or fighting Keystone XL or fighting TransCanada or shutting down tar sands. It's about protecting sacred water because it's a gift. It's finite. It's here for life. We have a saying, "Ni we chose on it. Through water there is life." So we understand that. And I think all of the two-leggeds on earth understand that now. They understand without water they can't live. Nothing can live without water. There's a substitute for gas, for oil, for uranium. There's no substitute for water. And I think the two-legged nation is starting to understand that. But understanding it isn't enough. We have to do something. We have to take responsibility. We have to take action. And we have to do it together. The Lakotas can't protect water all alone. Neither can the Diné. All of us have to protect water together. When I say it's our sacred water, I mean our sacred water. I don't mean the Ogallala Band of the Lakota Nation. I mean our sacred water. Were they mining tar sands up in Canada? That's our water they're wrecking. Your water, my water, his water, her water, it's our water. Just because it's up there doesn't mean it belongs to up there. It belongs to Unchimaka, as we all do. So there comes a time where we have to have responsibility, and not everybody can do that. Some people are so brainwashed and so colonized, they think, oh, it's his problem. It's her problem. I'm going to the mall, or I'm going to go watch a movie, or she'll take care of it. I'm going to go get bingo. You know, he'll take care of it. I got to go write a book. You know, that's what I got to do. But that's not true. Everybody has to do whatever they can do, wherever they're at, whatever they have, every single day. Because every single day, our water is being made extinct. There's no more water here. They think they found it on Mars now. Yeah. But it's our water, and if that is our relative, it's up to us to be a good relative and to protect that water. And that means taking courage, being ready to stand up, being ready to defend your land, your air, your water, your family, your community, your children, your coming generations, your way of life. How many Americans are willing to do that? How many of you have a beautiful American way of life that you want to preserve? When I come out here into the big land, I just feel loneliness from people. I feel a disconnectedness out there. And I really feel for that, because at home I'm loved, I have all my relatives, and I mean, I wake up in the morning, somebody's kissing me on the forehead. I don't know who it is. Might be a, you know?
Tell it, Alex.
It might be my little grandson. It might be my husband. Might be one of my daughters. Might be one of my daughter-in-laws. But somebody kisses me on the forehead, and then I know there's going to be a cup of water sitting by my bedside. They're bringing me water. That's what we do first thing in the morning. Try it. It will change you. Wake up in the morning, drink water, pray with it first, thank it, thank the water, ask it to heal you, and it will. Pray with it and drink it into your body, and it will bless you, and it will comfort you, and it will guide you. And I hope to all of the powers that be, it will help you have the courage to stand up for it and to protect it and to put your body out there on the line. You know, that's what we all have to be ready to do. And that's what Moccasins on the Ground is all about. It's teaching skills, education, tactics, techniques, abilities, the experience. How do you put your moccasins on the ground? How do you do that? That's what we've been going around teaching people for a couple of years now. Because that TransCanada, if President Obama says yes, they plan on coming right through here. You know, the people in Canada, they don't want it up there. They don't want a pipeline up there, so they're going to run it down here. And if it spills down here, they're not going to scoop it up and send it back to Canada. Whosever land it spills on, they have to worry about cleaning it up, and they're liable for it. Horrible situation. So we're getting ready to go home and do moccasins on the ground. It's going to be a big training. We're bringing NBDA trainers in from all over. We're bringing in our medicine people. We're bringing in Native Nations leaders from everywhere, all the four directions. And it's about Red Nations rising. Red Nations rising. Red Nations rising. White Nation needs to rise. Black Nation needs to rise. We are not all the same. We are all different, and we all deserve the right to be different. You have your inherent birthright to be who you are. I have my inherent birthright to be who I am. But what's beautiful about Lakota is Lakota means allies. See, we can all have the right to be who we are, but we can be allies with one another. Take care of each other, respect each other without trying to beat each other or wipe out each other. But the other deep down meaning of Lakota is together forever with love. That's what it means. That's who my people are. So when we go home, we're going to do our training, we're going to go to the river, and we're going to have a ceremony with our water. And we're going to ask the water to be with us and to help us and to guide us and to not leave us. We have a prophecy. Crying earth rise up. Someday the earth will weep. She will cry with tears of blood. You will make a choice. You will help her or she will die. And when she dies, you too will die. That's our prophecy. We have a prophecy that a time is coming when the people will rise. Our teachings tell us when nothing but little boys are born for so many years, prepare for battle. Prepare for battle. They're bringing us sons. And we have a lot of boys at home. For the last 5, 6, 7 years, mostly boys have been coming to us. So when you know who you are, when you know what is in your mind, in your heart, in your spirit, then you know what you have to do. You have to take courage. You have to be brave. You have to be willing to give it up. Maybe you're going to get arrested and go to jail. That's what NVDA is. It's a right in this country to do civil disobedience. We all do it for our causes all the time. You know, this whole thing is about people standing up, right? And left forum. I don't think it's a place for lazy people. I think it's a place for people who really care and want to find the right way to do things. Or should I say left way to do things? But anyway, I'm just glad I got back in the building, and I'm I got to burn a little sage and drink some water and talk to all you all good people. And when I go home, I'm going to go home really sad, because there were some things I heard today that really made me feel bad with Noam Chomsky. You know, it's sad that there's an older philosopher, educated man who still thinks like that, who still talks like that. And that kind of saddened me. I thought he should have talked more about how it's the Red Nation's people, the smallest nations, the poorest nations, fighting the hardest for Mother Earth, when it's the biggest, richest, most populated countries working to destroy the Earth. He gave two sentences to that. That hurt my feelings, so I'm going to have a talk with Noam.
And listeners, you were just listening to Deborah Whiteplume. That was her presentation from a panel called Indigenize Our Paradigms, delivered at this year's Left Forum, which was held from June 7th through 9th at Pace University in New York City. If you want to check out more information about either speaker from the show today, I want to let you know that Teocasin Ghost Horse's audio archive for his radio show called First Voices Indigenous Radio is all online, and that is at www.firstvoicesindigenousradio.org. And also to look at what Oeaku is doing to follow up on Deborah Whiteplume's work from the Lakota homeland, you can go to www.oeakuinternational.org, and that is spelled OweaKu international.org. Again, OweaKu international.org. Oeaku. And before I close up the program, I want to acknowledge and thank the stations that syndicate this program. And in closing, I'm going to leave you with a track called When We Walk Together by Red Tail Chasing Hawks. This is in the spirit of solidarity invoked by both Teocasin Ghost Horse and Deborah Whiteplume. Thank you for tuning in. Mahalo.